Well, half her luck, she regrets nothing. I don't think she lived a great life then, because if you have no regrets, you've made no mistakes, and everybody does. I think I'm like everybody else, make them every day, so there's plenty to mention. But the problem is a lot of people don't mention them. They try to avoid them, pretend they haven't made them, and it just never works. Joining me now to discuss the issue of mistakes and what to do when you've made them is Deborah Grayson Regal. She's Director of Learning at the Boda Group, a leadership and team development firm. And she also teaches management communication at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business. Deborah Grayson Regal, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
It's true, isn't it? We all make mistakes.
100% true. I have yet to meet somebody who hasn't, who is, you know, any older than a day old.
Hmm. And when we do, we say, oh, God, I feel stupid. But it's a challenge to our identity, isn't it? Who we see ourselves as, competent, for example. You make a mistake and you think, oh, I look incompetent. Perhaps I am incompetent.
Yeah. We often feel what's known as a source of self-threat. So it's a threat to how we see ourselves, and that often can spiral out of control, that if we realize that we are seeing ourselves through a lens that feels unflattering, what happens is we actually start behaving in even more unflattering ways, and it becomes a vicious cycle.
And what are those unflattering ways in which we behave when we realize we've made a mistake and we don't look so good?
So it could be anything from feeling very defensive, well, it wasn't me, it was him. It could be something where we dramatize it and think to ourselves, well, I made this one little mistake, but I have a lifetime of mistakes. I'm not worthy. It's something where we can imagine ourselves dwelling on the mistake. I'm going to be thinking about this for the rest of our lives. And the more we have thoughts that are unflattering to how we see ourselves, and maybe even more importantly, how we want other people to experience us, our behaviors tend to be the kinds of behaviors that put other people at a distance from us. So it really becomes, as I mentioned, this cycle where our experience of the behavior actually leads to worse relationships than if we just took responsibility for it early on and also told ourselves that this doesn't have to mean I'm a terrible person, I'm not competent at my job, and going down that path.
Mm. I was interested that this article you've written is in the Harvard Business Review, because that's the sort of thing I was taught as a child. You know, take responsibility for who you are and what you've done. And when I was employing people, if someone stood up and said it was me and I messed up, this is where we messed up, I liked them. I thought they were good people because it saved me hunting around to find out where the mistake was made. But in the corporate world, there seems to be a reluctance to take that responsibility.
It really depends on the culture that you are working in, or if you're the leader, and leader at any level, it depends on the kind of culture that you're creating. So we know that in organizations where the culture and the climate is one of psychological safety, where people feel like they can speak up openly and honestly without fear of retribution, people are much more likely to admit when they have made a mistake, and they're probably more likely to accept feedback about mistakes that they may have made. But in cultures and climates where there is not psychological safety, where people fear retribution, where people fear shame, where people fear that this is going to color how they are seen now and in the future, people are looking for opportunities to blame and shame other people so that they can put the spotlight somewhere else.
Okay. Now, it's a common trend these days to say, you know, 5 easy ways to be the best person you can be, whatever, 10 easy chocolate cake recipes or whatever. But you have 3 parts to the conversations that people should have when they've made a mistake. What's the first one?
Yes. So the first part is to take responsibility.
That's a good idea, isn't it?
Well, I think it's a very good idea, and like so many pieces of advice, it is much easier said than done. And there's actually two parts of this, because, of course, the part we always picture is the external part, the part that we might see on a news broadcast where somebody says, I was wrong. But actually, before we do that, we have to take responsibility internally. We have to admit to ourselves that we made a mistake, that we were wrong, and perhaps that other people got hurt along the way. So the first is the internal conversation of taking responsibility, and then the second is the external part of taking responsibility. And I feel strongly that this is a place where active language is preferred rather than passive language. I get really frustrated when I see a news conference or something on television where somebody said, I admit that mistakes were made, or I admit that we had hoped for a different outcome, as opposed to I admit I was wrong.
There we go. Deborah, we've just had a Royal Commission into Banking Practices here, and the woman who was counsel assisting the commission, her name was Rowena Orr, and she's dubbed Shock and Awe now because of the magnificent way in which she gave people the opportunity to say, I was wrong, where they just avoided it like the plague. I mean, it was cringeworthy to watch senior executives, CEOs, board members, avoiding responsibility. And then when they danced around the facts, she'd just pull out a piece of paper and say, can I take you to this document? Does it say this? Yes, it does. Well, doesn't that mean that you actually did what I've just outlined? And even then, some of them would try and get out of it. Now, why is it at the level of a bank that when I grew up, you thought they knew what they were doing? You can have management that don't get rule number one, take responsibility.
And I would suggest they probably know it, and they probably think it's for other people. One of the things that often happens when somebody makes a mistake is that they have this cognitive dissonance between how they see themselves. I see myself as competent. I see myself as trustworthy. I see myself as having had positive intentions. There's a gap between how they see themselves and how the rest of their culture, their team, the customers, and now the public see them. And when they recognize that there is a gap, they immediately go into crisis. And when they go into crisis, that's when we see people start to spin. So their head is spinning to try and reconcile that gap. And that's what we often hear people do, is spinning this into another scenario, which is mistakes were made. I couldn't have known. That's not what we were going for. It was somebody else.
I'm not laughing at what you're saying. I'm laughing at the sort of dissonance between that and what happened in the Banking Royal Commission. Now, tell us rule number two.
Rule number two is to address what you need to do right now. And part of that requires that you get out of your spin, the shame and embarrassment that you might feel, quickly enough so that you can take responsibility and then take action. And when you think about the core elements of crisis communication, right, tell them what happened, tell them what's happening now, and tell them what you're planning to do in the future, treat your mistake as a crisis, even if it's a small crisis. And you also want to distinguish the parts that can be fixed and the parts that can't be fixed. And you want to be very specific and transparent about what you are doing to address each of those parts. And there are going to be practical parts of a mistake that needs to be fixed, right? So we spent more money than we anticipated, so now we're going to have to figure out where we're going to have some cost savings. And there are also emotional and relational impacts to making a mistake. I stepped on somebody's toes. I, you know, really insulted somebody personally and professionally in order to get what I want. And you need to take care of both of those.
I'm talking with Deborah Grayson Regal. She teaches management communication at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business. And we're talking about mistakes and how to handle them. Now, Deborah, when you're talking about addressing what you need to do right now, you mentioned that you should over-communicate your plans. Why do you say that?
you've had a breach of trust if you've made a mistake, even if you didn't intend to, and even if you clean it up quickly. And one of the things that we know builds trust is when people are perceived as sincere, when people are perceived as transparent, when people are perceived as being reliable, and when people are perceived as caring about how the actions they're taking and the decisions they're making would be perceived by other people as well. And the only way to be seen as all of those things is to be communicating, communicating, and communicating. And we often recognize that in organizations and relationships where people under-communicate, we tend to make up stories about what is going on in the absence of information. And I have found that we rarely make up happy stories when we don't have enough information. So don't give people the opportunity to make up stories. Fill in the gaps, because otherwise they're going to do it for you.
Sure, a void will be filled, and not always pleasantly. Look, this is so realistic. I just find myself constantly going back to the question, why don't people get this? Now, what's rule number three?
Rule number three is share what you're going to do differently next time. So it's one thing to make a mistake. It's another thing to keep making the mistake over and over again because you haven't learned anything. And we know that being wrong hurts. It threatens our sense of identity and, in fact, can have practical and relational impacts. And you need to take the time to self-reflect on how you contributed to this mistake. You also might reflect on how others might have contributed as well, but that's for a later time. And you want to really think about what you are going to do differently, what you might have ignored this time, what you might have run over too quickly this time, and over-communicate what you would do differently next time in a similar scenario. That's part of building back the trust that gets breached when you make a mistake.
Mm. You make a final point saying that as soon as you recognize you're wrong, make sure the next words you utter aim to rebuild your identity, your reputation, and your relationships. My only disagreement is to say make sure the next words you utter rebuild your identity. Don't aim for it. Get there.
I can accept that. I might have made a mistake. Who knows?
Tempera Grayson Regal, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I went out to see if I could fall in love again. That was my mistake. That was my mistake.